Real Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. My name is JD. We are live. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. Today is the 9th day of April. I'm pretty sure it's a Thursday. I'm not sure. I'm going to look. Yeah, it's a Thursday. There we go. So we made it through Wednesday yesterday. It's Thursday today. It's funny how they do that. They go in order all the time. Anyway, yeah, we're live right now. Appreciate all you guys joining us in the chat room this morning. I do see all the usual suspects, as Red is pointing out, all the usual suspects in there. This morning. Can't thank you guys enough for being in there. I'm hoping today is going to be an awesome show, you guys. We've got Kenneth Shorten Jr. joining us. He is the perpetrator behind the DailyEconomist.com. Fascinating guy. He's certainly an economics expert, somebody who also deals a lot in geopolitics. He is an investor in real time. So he is very insightful. And last time we were on with him, I want to say it has to have been about 3 months now. We didn't get to talk about a lot of things that were going on, and that we made some predictions last time. Some of them came true. We didn't get an opportunity to talk about the 7-year cycles and the Shemitah year and all of that type of stuff because it was just kind of hitting the radar. So we're going to pick his brain about some of that today, as well as all the other things that are going on in the world, because it's crazy out there, ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you. And then tomorrow, Andrew Gause, one of my very favorite people, another monetary historian and numismatic expert. But, you know, he's such a great guy to hang out with on a Friday. Cannot wait for that as well. Really appreciate you guys tuning in so early on a Thursday. It feels early today, does it not? Is it just me? I got to tell you, too. I live in the middle of Missouri, and we are prepping right now for some bad weather today. I'm looking outside behind me, just kind of giving you guys a heads up. If you have seen that movie, The Neverending Story, it literally looks like the nothing back here, and it's coming our way. So if the show drops off at some time in the future, I may end up in Kansas. I'm just saying, it could happen. It could happen. We're right in the crux of it here right now, ladies and gentlemen. The wind is blowing pretty hard. So anyway, if we drop off, that's why. It's not because I don't love you guys. So, what else is going on? There's not a lot to talk about towards the end of the week in terms of prepping you guys on guests. So it kind of cuts into my monologue a little bit. Anyway, hope you guys are doing well. Let's hop into the news, because there is a lot going on right now. Did you guys hear about this bank heist that took place in the UK? This is crazy. This is like straight out of a Hollywood movie. The Hatton Garden heist, as it will surely become to be known here, was every safe deposit box nightmare holder. Every safe deposit box holder's nightmare, every movie director's dream. This thing that they pulled off over the weekend, ladies and gentlemen, outside of London, is pretty darn impressive. Thieves apparently used heavy cutting equipment and rappelling gear. They broke into the vault of a very esteemed 60-year-old safe deposit company in the heart of London over the past holiday weekend, possibly taking advantage of as many as 4 days to rifle through an uncounted number of safe deposit boxes. They reportedly got away with hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of gems and cash, and even in an educated guess of one former police official, as much as 200 million pounds, almost $300 million. This is huge. So a lot of people are already coming out saying, obviously, this is an inside job. Because there's not a lot of details coming out as of yesterday. We're still trying to figure out what's going on. They're supposedly doing this slow and painstaking forensic examination, but they're saying it's going to take a couple of days to figure this all out, but they believe that they only actually hit 60 to 70 different safe deposit boxes, which to me seems a little bit suspicious. If you've got 4 days and you're in a bank whose only business is to hold said safe deposit boxes, how would you know which ones to hit? And especially if you're going to be as successful as $300 million, that's a crazy, crazy amount of heist. I mean, that's crazy, right? And if they only hit 60 or 70, that seems to me like they probably knew what was going on. Also, security alarm did go off, right? The security people did apparently show up at the business to see what was going on, and they didn't even get out of their cars. They said the back door and front door looked like they were locked and secure, so they didn't even go in. So these guys were inside the bank for 4 days rifling through safe deposit boxes, and as of yet, they haven't told any of the customers, which, so a lot of people in the chat room saying, inside job, insurance scam, I totally believe. I'm wondering if Greece is going to make some large payment to the IMF later this week using gemstones. I'm just pointing that out there right now, just curious if Greece ends up paying the IMF off in diamonds, then that would be a pretty good indicator as to who did this. But this particular building was right in the heart or the epicenter of London's jewelry trade, and it has been since the medieval times. This apparently is one of the most world-renowned jewelry locations in the world, basically the six square blocks around where this would happen, which just, again, kind of flies in the face that, if a security alarm were to go off in an area like that, why would the security forces not investigate more than just going up and checking to make sure the door was locked? You know what I mean? So again, I'm kind of with you guys in the chat room on this one. We'll have to wait and see what the fallout's going to be from this. But man, I can't even imagine if you would, put all your priceless family heirlooms into some kind of box that was supposed to. That's all these people do. They Haddon Garden Safe Deposit Limited. You can actually go to their website, and it says it offers a secure and cost-effective solution to store and protect important and irreplaceable personal belongings. So how is it exactly that they insure irreplaceable personal belongings? I bet there are a lot of people asking that question right now in London, but this is, that's got to be one of the largest heists ever, right? I mean, that's much larger than the $40 million in gold that we saw get stolen out of that, the highway in North Carolina a couple months ago. That was what, $8 million? That was the 11th largest heist ever. Anyway, I wanted to start with something that wasn't war this morning or something that wasn't awful bad news, but probably the best thing that we'll see out of this will be a movie. Okay, bad news for the United States right now. I have a feeling. I'm just putting that out there. I know we're in the international news section right now, but Libya came out with a pretty startling announcement yesterday. Libya's internationally recognized parliament said earlier this week that it has uncovered new elements behind the 2012 assassination of the U.S. ambassador when the American consulate was stormed in eastern Benghazi. So a deputy head of the Parliamentary Security and Defense Committee told the AFP on Tuesday that he has been tasked with leading a team of inquiry. So this is getting pretty serious here. So he said this team had new elements on the real perpetrators of the attack, and they're going to be working closely with the FBI and congressional commissions of inquiry, although he did not elaborate on the details of the assailants. This is super big news here, guys. So this Libyan parliamentary delegation is set to travel to the United States now for consultations with members of Congress. Again, this is the the Parliamentary Security and Defense Committee deputy head speaking earlier this week. So the U.S. Special Forces obviously seized a Libyan national. I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead here. Christopher Stevens, who is the ambassador, and the three other Americans were killed in the September 11, 2011, 2012 attack on the consulate, said that it was that was said at the same time to be work of the jihadist group Ansar al-Sharia, which Washington branded as a terrorist organization. But the U.S. Special Forces seized a Libyan national, Katala, as a chief suspect in the raid and handed him over to the American judicial authorities. But Libya has been run by two governments and two parliaments since August when the Islamic-backed militia alliance overran the capital in Tripoli, and the government recognized by the international community fled to the country's far east and set up in the city of Turkuk. But anyway, the long story short here is that Libya now has figured out quite a bit more about what exactly happened with Benghazi, and the fact that they are coming here to work with the FBI and a congressional commission of inquiry is pretty telling, I think. that's funny, Wood. Sorry, you guys are getting me all distracted. Morning, Kevin. Hey, thanks for being in the chat room this morning, buddy. Okay. So anyway, the fact is that Libya is going to come here and they're going to start talking to the FBI and probably start talking to specific members of Congress about what actually happened there in Benghazi. I think this is a bode of a bad news for Mrs. Clinton on that. I don't. Obviously, they're not going to get into any details beyond that. But again, I just think that's what's going to happen here. I think there's going to be much more fallout from this Benghazi thing, and rightly so, rightly so. Okay, trying to get my brain straight here, guys. We had a little follow-up story with Tsipras going and meeting in Moscow yesterday. We had the kind of the breaking news during the show yesterday that there wasn't going to be any kind of, you know, sweeping in by Russia to offer loans to Greece to make sure that, you know, they can pay off the IMF. So we kind of had conjectured that that could have happened. But again, so anyway, Greece did say that they're going to use its presence in various European institutions to promote dialogue between Russia and the EU countries. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras said after a meeting Russian President Vladimir Putin on Wednesday. So anyway, a dialogue on a range of European issues, including security in the region, is not possible without Russia, Tsipras said. So again, they're going to get a little bit close. They're going to get a little bit closer, I think. Long-term and strategic cooperation with Europe has always been on Russia's agenda, so there's nothing new or unusual in Tsipras' action in this direction. This is Putin speaking as he addressed some supporters there in his neighborhood. Speaking at the meeting also with Tsipras, Putin also stressed that Athens had not formally asked Moscow for any financial help. But in a related story, Russia has drafted a number of proposals that could end the embargo on food products from Greece, and Russia's economic developer minister, Aleksey Yevlakhov, said that on a meeting. Again, saying this yesterday in that meeting with Tsipras. So kind of basically all the stuff that we said was going to happen. There was going to be some softening of the agricultural bans between Russia and Greece. And that's because a lot of people don't probably know this, but Greece has really been hit hard by these sanctions coming down from the EU, because more than 40% of Greece exports actually go to Russia. And in 2013, that was more than 178 million euros in fruits and conserves. They were all exported to Russia. So up until the ban, Russia had been Greece's biggest single trading partner, again, worth about $12.5 billion a year. And in 2013, it more doubled since 2009. So this is a big deal. Part of the sanctions against Russia are really affecting Greece's ability to really do anything. So it's kind of a double-edged sword that Greece is going through right now. And it's kind of nice to see Russia at least attempting to do something to alleviate a little bit of that. And probably still standing in the wings to be ready to swoop in with some loans should they need to. Also, in somewhat related news, the Ukraine will sign a set of agreements with NATO on military technical cooperation in intelligence, surveillance, and other areas, according to the Ukrainian Prime Minister Yatsenyuk and his cabinet. So again, this document will see implementation of four trust projects, including military technical cooperation. This whole thing is just more of the slippery slope as they are trying to bring Ukraine into NATO. So that's kind of what's going on here. We had Rick Rozoff on. We've talked quite a bit about the actual constraints that exist inside of Ukraine that would limit them from being really fully on board with NATO. We also had them sign that decree securing their non-alignment status back in 2010. And then after Yanukovych was kicked out in 2014, I think that non-allegiance status was revoked. So again, we're starting to see them kind of basically working their way towards NATO. And this is another big step in that. So, you know, we're basically still fighting a proxy war in the Ukraine. Nothing has changed since yesterday. That's what I know right now, guys. So anyway, the series of reforms will have to be implemented again for Ukraine to meet NATO standards. I think it's no foreign troops on your soil, and you also have to have your borders really well under control. What's interesting here is that the NATO secretary outlined some additional criteria, talking mostly about having to combat corruption and improve the efficiency of state bodies, which seems to me like total crap because that has nothing to do with actual NATO membership. That's just more, you know, we got to modernize Ukraine after we blow the heck out of it. Anyway, we talked yesterday about Pakistan picking up those, 8 different nuclear submarines from China, as well as about 20 of the super sweet new attack helicopters. Well, not to be outdone, India announced yesterday that they are going ahead and undock their super secret Scorpion stealth submarine as well. So again, you can see more war, more people fomenting at the mouth to do bad things to one another. And India does not want to be outdone by Pakistan. They're obviously kind of, you know, their geopolitical rivals in that area. So India undocks its first stealth submarine, trying to keep up with Pakistan. So good times there. Also on Tuesday, a security source in Anbar province, we're moving on to Iraq here real quick, said that a joint force destroyed an ISIS rank and killed a number of ISIS militants in western Ramadi. So anyway, this afternoon, a joint force consisting of the local police elements and federal units backed by Army's Air Force has managed to repel an ISIS attack from three axes on the police headquarters in the area of Al-Sabin Kilo, which is located in western Ramadi, noting that also a joint force attacked the group ranks and killed a number of ISIS militants and destroyed five of their Toyotas. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Still progress being made in Iraq. And it did come out from the Pentagon yesterday. I should probably mention, too, that we have provided weapons and garments and things like that, soft, what do you want to call it, soft stuff, body armor, all that stuff for 10,000 troops over the last month in Iraq. That just kind of snuck out in a little report from the Pentagon yesterday saying, yep, we did definitely provide at least 10,000 troops worth of equipment over the last, I think, was 60 to 90 days, so going to Iraq. So again, the coalition's still going strong there. Kind of a weird story coming out of NORAD right now. NORAD saying that Pyongyang does in fact have the capability of launching an ICBM with a nuclear warhead on the United States. That's essentially what they're saying right now. And when NORAD gets concerned about something, I really don't care. But what they're saying is that the Pyongyang, you know, obviously North Korea have moved ahead with their super, super secret technical ability to move missiles around on mobile launch pads, and that's just too much for us to handle. So we're getting concerned about that, and we're starting to practice some sort of response. I don't know if it's true or not. You know, is it true? Is it not? Every time I see one of these missiles being carted around in a parade now, I'm going to harken back to what Savando said the other day when we were on the phone with him. He mentioned that when he was in Cuba, he noticed that all of those missiles were made out of cardboard. He didn't actually say that on air, so I probably shouldn't have said that. But again, apparently that's what a lot of these guys do, is they'll make these really very technical-looking mock-ups, and that's what they'll use on these parade displays, and that's what the picture I'm looking at right now. So you just got to wonder if it's really true that Pyongyang actually has weapons like that. Hey, Kevin, I wanted to ask you about this story because I don't know enough about it to do any details, but this broke on RT last night. Sturgeon hinting at another Scottish independence vote. And I, you know, all the Scottish independence stuff kind of went down before I had started listening to your program. So I don't really know which way you come down on this. I hope that, you know, I would imagine that independence is probably something that you guys support. But this is a story that I just wanted to touch on because I know it touches on some lives over there. The foreign minister, Nicola Sturgeon, has hinted that she would seek another independence referendum in 2016 that could see Scotland separating from the Ukraine, from the UK. Is this a situation of just try again until you get it done? What do you guys think? I don't know. I'm just saying. Also, in crazy news from France, and I don't, these people are crazy. She sold out last time and now she is getting in with the UK government. Sell out. Okay, copy that. She's not a good person. Roger that. If Kevin knows, man, that's, you know, that's the best source of info that I've got from over there. Okay, also in France, on April 1st, the UDI members of parliament introduced an amendment to a French healthcare law that would ban publicly accessible self-service soda fountains and free soda refills in restaurants. The measure passed overwhelmingly through France's National Assembly, and if it passes the Senate, it will become law. So again, they're trying to outlaw self-serve sodas in France because the nanny state is just, I'm telling you, man, I was actually thinking about visiting France sometime in the future and I'm just not going to do it now anyway. And then also it's funny because they're citing it as a health concern. They're saying, you know, the obesity thing is getting out of control. I don't think that's what it is because there was a report that came out last year talking about global incidence of obesity and France is actually pretty low on the list. They're not really, you know, obesity isn't really a major issue like it is here in the United States. So anyway, if it moves through the Senate, you will no longer be able to get free sodas or soda refills or even self-serving sodas at in France. What a world, ladies and gentlemen. What a world. Okay, moving on to some national news right now. Probably the biggest story here in the United States would be that of Mr. Sarnoff, the man charged with the Boston Marathon bombing in April of 2013. He has been found guilty on all 30 charges that he faced. This guilty verdict means he is eligible for the death penalty. Oh, man, I don't know. I'm still really on the fence on this issue, too. I've seen quite a few videos out there that lead me to believe that most of this was not true or wasn't an actual event. I'm also kind of of the opinion here that, you know, obviously we've had so many stories recently about the FBI nurturing these events into being. Was this DP's calling it out here. Was this guy framed? Was this some stupid kid that was nurtured into doing something and the FBI just for some reason didn't pull the plug on this one? That to me seems a lot more likely than this 21-year-old kid going out and deciding just because his brother was somehow radicalized that he was going to go do that. Anyway, so he's, yes, guilty on all 30 charges. This means he will be eligible for the death penalty. He only needed to be found guilty on one of the 17 capital charges for a death penalty to be applicable. So he was convicted of conspiracy to use a weapon of mass destruction, possession and use of a firearm during a crime of violence, conspiracy to bomb a place of public use, bombing a place of public use, conspiracy to maliciously destroy property and malicious destruction of property by means of an explosive, all of which caused death. He was also found guilty on 11 charges in which the crime did not result in death, and the counts include carjacking, resulting in serious bodily injury, interference with commerce by threats and violence, possession and use of a firearm during a crime of violence, and also use of a weapon of mass destruction. So the jury in the trial reached a verdict after only 11 hours of deliberation. His lawyer, Judy Clark, did acknowledge that her client fully participated in the bombing. And again, that's usually not a good way to start off your defense, is when they say, yes, he did everything that you were accusing him of. That's when you know you need a different defense attorney, ladies and gentlemen. Just saying. Well, you're screwed at that point anyway. She said that it was her client. She did all this, but she did argue that he was an impressionable young man in the sway of his older brother, Tamerlan, who had become a radicalized Muslim and who she accused of masterminding the attack. Clark said that she felt like her client should be spared the death penalty. So anyway, we're going to be moving on towards the guilty phase into the punishment phase now. The same jury will hear evidence and then decide whether to sentence him to death or life in prison without possibility of parole. And the schedule for the next phase is undetermined, but it could start as early as next week, according to the judge. So that is what's going on there in the United States with the Boston bombing situation. I don't like seeing these kids getting framed, but I don't know that that's what happened there. Oh, man. Lots of people in the chat room believe that that was probably a hoax. And then PRC saying that the FBI also executed material witnesses in Florida. I just don't know. I think that whole thing, like most things on TV these days, are probably just fake, you know. Let's talk a little bit, too, about the I'll tell you what. You know, this immigration issue that's going on the southern border of the United States. We've been talking about it a little bit more because the weather's getting warmer and it's starting to ramp up quite a bit. It's also in the vein of everything that's going on between this judge in Texas, this judge Andrew Hannon, and also Mr. Barack Obama, because there have been quite a few back and forths here going on now. President Barack Obama's new deportation amnesty apparently now will remain halted. The federal judge in Texas ruled Tuesday night in an order that also delivered a judicial spanking to the presidential's lawyers for misleading the court. Judge Andrew Hannon, ladies and gentlemen, he is peeved. So we'll just say. So he first halted this amnesty back in February, just 2 days before it was supposed to take effect. And said he's even more convinced of his decision now, particularly after Mr. Obama earlier this year said he intends for his policies to supersede federal laws. So Judge Hannon pointed out to Mr. Obama's comments at a February town hall when President warned immigration agents to adhere to his policies or else to face consequences, right? So that was the indication that really put Hannon over the top here. So he says, in summary, the chief executive has ordered that the laws requiring the removal of illegal immigrants that conflict with the 2014 DHS directive are not to be enforced, and that anyone who attempts to do so will be punished. This is what Judge Hannon wrote. This is not merely inefficient enforcement. This is total non-enforcement. The judge continued saying that Mr. Obama's own descriptions of how he is carrying out his policies have hurt his case. Mr. Obama in November announced his new amnesty for illegal immigrants. Parents whose children are either in the U.S. As citizens or legal permanent residents, and this amnesty could apply to as many as 5 million illegal immigrants. Texas and 25 other states sued to stop Obama, and Judge Hannon sided with them, finding that they have now indeed suffered an economic harm from the policy, granting them standing in court, and then finding that the president broke the law in bypassing Congress to announce this policy in the first place. And the administration has appealed Judge Hannon's ruling, but also asked the judge to consider. And on Tuesday, the judge not only refused to reconsider, but he also said the administration had misled him when it said that no part of the amnesty had been implemented, and the lawyers bungled their attempts to try and repair the damage by filing an advisory with the judge earlier last month. Since November, the administration had been granting a three-year amnesty to illegal immigrant dreamers under the new policy, and that's a year longer than the two-year program Mr. Obama had announced for the dreamers back in 2012. More than 100,000 applicants were actually approved for the three-year amnesty between November 21st and the February date when Judge Hannon halted the program. So he goes on to say, whether by ignorance, omission, purposeful misdirection, or because they were misled by their clients, the attorneys for the government misrepresented the facts, the judge said, adding that he was stunned that the government waited more than 2 weeks after his ruling to inform him that the applications had already started to become processed. So Texas argues that if it had known the applications were being processed, it would have taken extra legal steps to try and halt the program earlier. So he said he still may issue sanctions against the government for misleading him, but he did decline to strike the government's pleadings, which would have essentially closed the case and granted victory to Texas. So he's keeping this a little bit open right now. But again, this dude is mad, Judge Hannon. And I completely agree with him right now, especially given the fact that Barack Obama thinks that he can just issue a decree and, you know, punish people for not actually following the Constitution or the law. It's just absolutely crazy right now. Just crazy. Okay, we're moving away. I'm going to read some stuff out of the chat room here real quick because everybody is commenting. Oh, yeah, we're talking about the FBI foiling terrorist plots again. I think they foiled another one earlier this week. I'm just not even sure anymore. It seems like every day they're getting involved with more and more people trying to do more and more things. We got to go to this 3 minute break, you guys. We got more national news when we come back. I'm going to drink a massive cup of coffee here over this next 3 minutes and try and get my brain going. And you guys just hang right here in the chat room. Appreciate you guys all being in there this morning. Talk amongst yourselves. I'll be right back, guys. Keep it here.
Chris and Cherie Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
A sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark as ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky. And you realize you are not prepared.
I'm telling you, take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to MyPatriotSupply.com. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns
burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Exposing faux capitalism with Jason Earp.
Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for being here with me this morning. And I've just had about 9 shots of espresso. So hopefully what I'm going to do is I'm going to try and use my brain more and use my mouth a little less. And we'll see if we can find a balance here in the middle. But some days, I'll tell you what, when it's dark outside in the morning here, I have a lot of trouble with the brain. I get the dumb. I don't know what's going on. I'm working on it though here, guys. Anyway, let's hop back into the national news, because here's a story that all of you will love to hate. This Wallingford, Connecticut man is in the news right now. He is being accused of placing 5, count them, 5 harassing phone calls to the Sandy Hook Elementary School and accusing staff of fabricating the 2012 massacre. He apparently is now going to be undergoing a mental health evaluation. He's been ordered not to contact the Sandy Hook Elementary School again. Timothy Rogalski, he is 30 years old. He apparently left 4 disturbing telephone messages on the school's answering machine on Tuesday morning, according to police. This is the 5th time he called. He spoke to an administrative assistant. During the calls, which were placed between 7:01 and 7:57 a.m., he referenced several of the 20 students and 6 educators killed in the school shooting, and then also claimed the Boston Marathon bombings were fake. Careful out there in the chat room, guys. So police said Rogalski also left messages on the machines of 2 other schools in Newtown. He was arrested in his home in Wallingford, charged with 5 counts of harassment, 1 count of disorderly conduct out of Monroe, and Newtown police also issued Rogalski a misdemeanor summons, charging him with harassment. He lives with his father. He's got prior arrests for marijuana possession, so we know this guy's a bad dude. Also, interfering with police, which I don't even know if that's a charge. Is that something you can, interfering with police? What does that mean? You get in a tickle fight with somebody? Anyway, he kept speaking in court despite advice from his public defender, and he said he knows he might have offended people, but he never threatened anyone, and he only made 5 calls. He said, I don't think I said anything that horrible. He is being held on a $50,000 bond right now. He's due back in court on the 22nd of April. Keep this guy in your thoughts and prayers, because this could be any one of us, really, right? This guy probably called with some pretty poignant questions about how a guy who is 115 pounds with Asperger's can get a 96.8% kill ratio. Tell you what, if that kid really did that, we need to have a complete restructuring of our military, because we're putting I don't know SEALs that can get you know, kill shot ratings like that. We need to completely restructure our military and fill it all with little kids with Asperger's and, you know, Bushmasters. Anyway, I'm digressing away from the point here, but this poor guy obviously now is going to be undergoing mental health evaluations because he has the audacity, A, to question the official story of Sandy Hook, and to, he, you know, had some cojones, actually called them and wanted to talk to somebody about it, and now he's going to go to jail. Well, he's probably in jail right now, because $50,000 bond for something that's stupid that's crazy to me. Okay, anyway, moving on here. Breitbart, Texas. This is a big story coming out of Breitbart, too. I will try and truncate this because I want to get through some more news today. Allegedly, there was an Iraqi man who, his name is Ahmed Andan Taha Al-Kafahaji. yes. His date of birth was 6/25/84. He apparently was caught coming across the U.S.-Mexico border back in February, and we're just kind of starting to see some details about this right now. Important because he has a sister in the U.S., got one in Turkey, three brothers in Turkey, one in the Ukraine, one in New York State, and three brothers in Iraq. He apparently spoke fluent Russian. He also lived in Crimea prior to the Russian invasion. Also further stated that some random Ukrainian paid $4,000 to get him to the United States, and also refused to identify the Ukrainian to U.S. officials. But just significant because the Border Patrol processing an individual doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be deported. But there was a statement put out when this guy was caught, and I don't know, this initial statement wasn't very clear. It was basically just said they encountered an adult Middle Eastern male in FAR, Texas. Subject was taken into custody and he's transported for further processing. That's basically all they said. But what was disclosed to Breitbart was actually some of the initial agents' observations about this guy, and I thought they were fairly interesting. One of the agents interviewing this guy when he was in there said that it was his opinion that this subject was a Russian asset and actually sent by the Russians to infiltrate the United States. The guy spent 6 years in the Ukraine, points obviously to extensive contact with Russian and the Russian community in Crimea. The Russian invasion of Crimea obviously is a red flag that Ahmad has Russian contacts. These are all agent observations about this guy, but just kind of pointing it out there that we did in fact find this guy who did work as a trainer for the Iraqi military for a long time. He's got a lot of family all around the world, no parents to speak of at this point, and then some Ukrainian essentially flew him here for some reason, and we don't know why. We also don't know if he was actually deported or not, so just you know pointing that out there. I don't know, not that we're scared of anything like this, but there you go. Also, well, let's see. Do we want to talk about that? That's boring. There's some boring stuff going on here today. Well, I guess it's not that boring. Apparently, according to the USA Today, the U.S. government started keeping secret records of Americans' international telephone calls about a decade before 2001, or September 2001, to be specific. They were harvesting billions of calls in a program that apparently provided a blueprint for the far broader NSA surveillance that followed. So more than two decades, the Justice Department and the Drug Enforcement Administration amassed logs of virtually all telephone calls from the USA to as many as 116 countries linked to drug trafficking, current and former officials involved with the operation said. The similarities between the NSA program and the DEA operations established a decade earlier are striking. So anyway, all I'm pointing out with this is that it's come out now that this entire war on terror did not start with 9/11. This government has been tapping our phones for two decades before that. I'm just going to get away from the story because it infuriates me. But, you know, the idea that that all of these security initiatives with global surveillance of the NSA was in response to the attacks from 9/11 is pure garbage, ladies and gentlemen. It's pure theater. Also, this is kind of important, I guess. The U.S. Aerospace Command is moving back to Cheyenne Mountain right now. So the U.S. military command that scans North America's skies for enemy missiles and aircraft plans to move its communications gear back to Cold War era mountain bunkers. This is not good. The shift to the Cheyenne Mountain base in Colorado is designed to safeguard the command's sensitive sensors and servers from a potential electromagnetic pulse attack. So the Pentagon last week announced a $700 million contract with Raytheon to oversee the work for the North American Aerospace Command, or NORAD, as they move back to the Cheyenne Mountain location. The head of NORAN and Northern Command said, because of the very nature of the way Cheyenne Mountain is built, it's EMP hardened. Okay, well then you have to ask yourself, why in 2006 did they decide to move NORAD and the U.S. Northern Command from Cheyenne to Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado Springs? The Cheyenne bunker was designated obviously as an alternative command center if needed, but the move was touted apparently at the time is a more efficient use of resources, but it also followed hundreds of millions of dollars worth of modernization work at the Cheyenne carried out after the attacks of September 11, 2001. So this is like the third time that they are going to – yes! Oh, my gosh. Sorry. I got excited about something someone just said in the chat room. That's what happens when you're me. Anyway, Pentagon's moving everything back to Cheyenne Bunker, and it's going to cost another $1 billion probably. They just moved everything out of Cheyenne Bunker in 2006, but oh, Mike, we didn't know anything about EMPs back in 2006 because that was never had happened before. So now moving back to Cheyenne Bunker, ladies and gentlemen, and Raytheon, of course, good job. If you can get it, they're going to be getting those big, big contracts. Wow. Just crazy what's going on in the world. Okay, let's check out. Just wanted to point out somebody in the chat room said that they binged watched the UK series Utopia that I had recommended because we were talking so much about genetic modification of food and kind of this agenda. I'll tell you what, Utopia, if you haven't gotten a chance to see that, it is freaking amazing. It is amazing. And I think it's very telling. And I think it's very telling when they yank something off of the air before it's obviously come to some kind of conclusion. That seems to me to be another big indicator that maybe they were getting a little too close to the truth in that particular TV show. Okay, let's jump on to the economy right now. Everything looks fairly flat right now. The Dow is down, but just a touch. 17,868. The S&P down even less of a touch, but 2,072. The euro is currently dropping right now. We are at 106.83. The dollar index is currently rising at about the same frequency. We are just under 100. We're at 99.03. The Baltic Dry Index, now, Truth gave me that a little while ago, and I totally was supposed to write it down. I didn't. But my Baltic Dry feed right now looks like it's working. Down 5 points right now at 583. We'll have to see how accurate that actually is. $16.19 big pennies will get you a bright, shiny ounce of silver. And gold, for some reason, back below $1,200 again, $1,194, down another $8 today. Just absolutely crazy. The show I was mentioning, Mr. Kev Baker, is called Utopia. And yeah, there's somebody who found the link. Gosh, I love you guys in the chat room. We have the best listeners in the world at Truth Frequency. You got to watch that show, though. I'm telling you, there is a lot of things going on in there, and it's a little bizarre, I'm not gonna lie, but just focus on like kind of what the big picture agenda is, and you'll start to see a lot of correlations between what's actually going on in the world and all of that. Let's check also quickly what the crude oil sitting at 51.09, and let me check on your Bitcoin price right now. Taking a little bit of a step back today, 242.67 for a bright shiny Bitcoin, which you can't buy anyway. Also, speaking of heists, we had that big, the UK heist in London, which is going to obviously be a movie of the week here pretty quickly. But McEwen Mining on Tuesday reported also an armed robbery at its El Gallo mine, which is in Sonora, Mexico. And according to their statement, an estimated 900 kilograms of gold-bearing concentrate containing approximately 7,000 ounces of gold were stolen from the refinery. And based on today's prices, that heist is worth more than $8 million. The Toronto company says it maintains insurance against these types of incidents, insurance scam anyone, and is working closely with its insurance carrier to determine what extent of available coverage is available to it. But the policy will not be sufficient to cover the entire expected loss. No employees were seriously injured, and there was no material damage of any kind to the facilities. So again, starting to look here at maybe an inside job. Mexican authorities are, of course, investigating the incident vigorously, according to the company. So that's good, too. The Russian ruble continues to hit new highs against the dollar and the euro. It passed by 54 against the dollar yesterday and is strongest since mid-December, when a currency crisis blew out more than 30% of the ruble's value in just a couple of days. And gains were made despite the weakening crude prices. This currency, which was the worst performer in 2014, is now slated to be the best in 2015, as it has gained more than 10% this year. So if you'd gotten in at the low spot there, I think somebody may have made some of the recommendations along those lines. That would have been a good thing to do. And oil prices continue to play a less important role in the ruble's gyrations. In 2014, the Russian currency was closely tied to the benchmark variations and lost 50% of its value along with the Brent crude. But Russia's central bank said Tuesday that the Russian economy is ready to withstand $40 per barrel oil. So the reprieve corresponds with analysis and government officials changing their negative forecast for the Russian economy. And on Tuesday, the S&P said growth will return to 1.9% in 2016. So more cheerful predictions may have eased the nerves of Russians, getting them to buy more rubles after stocking up on foreign currency when the crisis hit back in December. Again, in December, the ruble spun into free fall with the dollar hitting 80 and the euro crossing the 100 mark threshold. And since that Black Tuesday, the ruble has recovered more than 40% of its value. I'm glad, Eric, I'm glad that you got amusement out of that. It's not often that you get to read the word gyrations in a news article. So I'm glad. See, this is why I'm here for you guys and why I like having you guys with me, because you pick up on the little details like that that just make all of this so much more enjoyable. Way to go. Way to go, Eric. Anyway, so inflation in Russia is still at a high of 16.9% annualized, but they do believe they can get it down to about 9% by next March. So, maybe ruble speculation is something you guys might want to get into. I don't know. Here's a weird story, too. For the federal debt, I don't really understand what's going on right now, but the Treasury has said that the debt has apparently been frozen at $18,112,975,000,000 for the last 21 days, which doesn't seem to make any sense, right? Because we're about $25 million below the current legal debt limit, and I'm not going to go through that number. But every time the Fed closes this week, and for the last 21 days, in fact, it has been frozen. So does that mean the debt crisis is over, or does that mean we're like there's some major monkey hedging going on in terms of some bookkeeping here at the Treasury? I don't understand this story at all. Definitely something I'll ask Kenneth Shortgen about here in just a few minutes. So we'll get away from that. Right, meow. Hopping over into some science and some tech stuff. Just wanted to point out, you know what really annoys me about the science and tech stuff? The older I get, the more I feel like we're living in a movie, or we're kind of in this position where we're like being trapped in time. You know what I mean? Like you don't know what day it is. You don't know what year it is. Everything around us in terms of a frame of reference is messed up. I mean, just look at the months of the year. You got September, what is that, the 10th month, and it's, or the 9th month, I don't even know, but it should be the 7th month, right? December, that's 10, but it's the 12th month. You know, we don't know what the hell is going on, but everything seems to be out in the future, right? It's everything they sell us is like, we're gonna someday, 10 years from now, everything's gonna be great. We're gonna have all this stuff and it's all gonna happen. And I think NASA's really big into this kind of thing. They really like to keep people with this idea that everything is going to happen off in the future. So NASA came out yesterday, and of course most of us probably don't believe anything these idiots say anymore, but they're saying, oh, we're definitely going to discover life sometime in the next 10 or 20 years. Okay, well, that's just ridiculous. There's a fantastic story today. Listen to this. This blew my mind last night. There's a lot of rumor out there about Mars having water, right? A lot of rumor out there, but apparently this week, for the first time, scientists have measured the territory of its glaciers. Okay, I'm just going to stop right there. Why is there a debate about whether or not there's water on Mars when the very next sentence from the said scientists are that they're measuring the territory of the glaciers? Okay, so glaciers, obviously water. Now, maybe not. Okay, some people could say, well, it might not be hydrogen or water, oxygen. It could be carbon monoxide glaciers. Okay, so anyway. Right now, scientists have measured the territory of the glaciers, which crisscross the planet, and they all hide apparently beneath a layer of dust. They are saying that the totality of the amount of ice on Mars could cover the entire planet with a meter of ice. That's pretty significant. That's not just suggesting that, yes, there is in fact maybe a little bit of water on Mars. That's saying that there's enough water that if it was all frozen, it would cover the entire planet with more than a meter. These findings were published in volume 41 of the Journal of Geophysical Research Letters, and they build on previous knowledge, which was the scars left by water that used to flow on the red planet apparently millions of years ago, the presence of polar ice caps, as well as chemical elements that tell a story. Underneath all that, however, lays a vast expanse of frozen water invisible from space. Or rather, it was only slightly visible with our satellites, but scientists couldn't tell if it was frozen H2O or CO2, right? Carbon monoxide. But then NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter made the call. It was water ice after all, and then it was up to determining the thickness or whether the glaciers resembled anything that we were used to on Earth. And now this Copenhagen team at the Niels Bohr Institute proposed a formula to surmise the above. It employs existing models of ice flow projections combined with what we could see from space, and the two approaches combined to allow for the eventual calculation of the volume of ice in the glaciers. And they say, we have calculated that the ice in the glaciers is equivalent to over 150 billion cubic meters of ice. That much ice would cover the entire surface of Mars with 1.1 meters of ice. I mean, that's substantial, is it not? That means we could go and live there, right? If we've got ice and we've got water and we already know that there's an environment because we've seen the pictures that NASA actually put out accidentally with the blue skies, right? It's not a red planet. It's a dusty planet. I'll give you that, but we know that there's water there. I don't know. I'm probably with a lot of you guys in the chat room here that probably think that we've colonized that place a whole long time ago. Which is why when Russia tried to launch their little orbiter to go check it out, it didn't even make it out of Earth's orbit. There was a lot of conjecture about that thing as well. Also, a heads up to an asteroid the size of a football field is approaching Earth and is expecting to pass by on Monday. It will be visible through strong binoculars, and it will be definitely worth a look. The next time such an asteroid comes this close again will be 2027, we hope. Fingers crossed. Anyway, so this one at its closest point will be about 1.2 million kilometers away, which is approximately 3 times the distance from the Earth to the Moon. It's estimated to be about 0.5 kilometers in damage, and it is classified by scientists as potentially dangerous. If it were to hit the Earth, obviously it would be a real big deal. But you can check out redpillreports.com. This is obviously in the show section underneath all of the news in the science and tech stuff, and you can, if you can figure out if you'll be able to check that thing out or not. Also, I got some bad news for people who believe in the sanctity of AT&T. AT&T data breaches has apparently exposed more than 250,000 U.S. customers' names and full or partial social security numbers, according to the government. So the company, AT&T, has now agreed to pay a $25 million civil penalty to settle an FCC commission investigation into the consumer privacy violations. The breaches apparently occurred at call centers used by AT&T in Mexico, Colombia, and the Philippines when employees accessed sensitive customer data without adequate authorization. Those employees also took payment from third parties who were apparently interested in the customer names and social security numbers so they could unlock stolen phones for sale on secondary markets. So again, AT&T, not necessarily, you know, the company AT&T, but certainly a breach of protocol at a minimum at these call centers, and really not even a breach of protocol. These guys were going into your personal accounts and they were taking information and selling it to third parties, right? So the investigation again found 3 call centers employees in Mexico accessed more than 68,000 accounts without authorization so that third parties could submit more than 290,000 unlock requests through an AT&T online portal. And over the course of the investigation into that breach, the FCC also discovered that approximately 40 company employees in the Philippines and Colombia had also accessed about 211,000 customer accounts for the same illicit purposes. So there you go. More breaches. And you know what bothers you about that is that it isn't something that you did, and it's obviously, you know, bad people doing bad things, and those are the people that are being paid, you know, supposedly to keep your stuff safe. You know, that's like a big time no-no. If I was AT&T, and they're only getting charged $25 million for that, that seems a little crazy to me too, because that, I don't know, I'd be pissed. Anyway, too, and if your stuff got breached, you're probably not going to get any of that money anyway. So there you go, good times. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about reading and about the health of reading, maybe. Let's see. Do we want to talk about that? What's going on with Tesla? They're introducing a new entry-level version of its Model S. That'll be kind of neat when that comes out. Germany is slapping Google with a data collection limit and a fine. We'll then wait to see if Google decides to appeal this fine or not. But German officials did say Wednesday they ordered Google to limit the collection of personal data in the U.S. Internet giant's latest run-in with authorities inside the EU, and the Data Protection Office in the city of Hamburg said it told Google to make the necessary changes so that use of its German users' data is on a permissible legal basis. So again, Google likes to push that limit up to the creepy line on that. You know what I mean? Oh, I gotta talk about this too, because this is pretty rad. Researchers from Stanford University have now built a battery that does everything you wish your cell phone battery in your phone could do, your cell phone lithium ion battery, right? This team announced its aluminum ion battery prototype Monday in the journal Nature, and it is literally a glimmer of hope for every thumb-pounding smartphone addict out there. The battery can fully charge in 1 minute, it can hold a charge longer than conventional batteries, and it is safer than lithium ion batteries. I'm not going to go through the how they actually did it because I don't understand it, but they are a team from Stanford, and that makes them more qualified than myself. But anyway, this aluminum battery produces about 2 volts of electricity, and it can be recharged more than 7,500 times without any decay in its total capacity. By comparison, Other experimental aluminum batteries died after less than 100 charges, and the conventional lithium-ion battery that you have in your cell phone is limited to about 1,000 cycles. So this aluminum battery also has one other advantage over the lithium-ion batteries, and that it does not catch fire if you were to, say, drill a hole through the battery. So that's another important safety tip. But the very fact that they need to up the voltage. They're trying to get it to produce twice the voltage that it produces right now. Again, they only produce about 2 volts, but if they can get that to the five volt threshold, we're essentially just as a major game changer for cell phones and for battery storage technology. Pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff. What else is going on? What else? There's a great article about reading. I'm not going to go through this whole thing, but seriously, reading does make you a better person. And that's not just saying that. There's actually scientific studies that says it makes you more empathetic, and it makes you use larger words, and helps you understand people's emotions better. So reading really is fundamental. Does make you a better person. Makes you better at dealing with math when you're young, things like that. So, okay, let's talk a little bit about some health stuff too, because there are some important health news going on right now. Mostly the FDA kind of throwing down the gauntlet. They have called a hearing to decide the future of access to homeopathic medicines. So urgent comments are needed right now to protect health freedom. The FDA is reevaluating their regulatory framework for homeopathic remedies. So if you are a friend or a supporter of homeopathy, you have to act immediately and tell the FDA that you want to maintain your freedom to be able to use these weapons. Yes, the hearing will be on April 20th and April 21st in 2015. You can send materials to the FDA to support homeopathic freedom. Materials must be received by the FDA by June 22nd. So FDA wants to hear from patients and consumers, as well as healthcare providers and those selling or manufacturing homeopathic medicines. You can also apply to speak in person or listen to the live meeting. You'll be able to listen to the live meeting in a broadcast on the meeting and then comment afterwards. So the comment period is going to be open until June 22nd. So again, if you are concerned about them regulating out of existence your ability to use homeopathic medicines, this is going to be important. You're going to want to get involved with this. I will get you guys more up to date as this goes forward. I'll see what I can do here to make sure the hearing. There is a live link in this article. Again, this will be under the health section. If you go to redpillreports.com in the show section for today, down at the kind of at the bottom there in the health section, so you'll be able to find out more about this. But FDA throwing the gauntlet down on homeopathic medicine, and they are calling for some open comment periods. So this is going to be a big time involvement from you guys. We want to get involved with this and make sure that people who need the access to this type of medicine still get it, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. I'm done with the news, ladies and gentlemen. That's as much as I can do right now. We're going to go to this 3-minute break, and when I come back, Kenneth Shorten Jr. of The Daily Economist is going to be here, and I think we're just going to gab. We're just going to figure out what's going on in the world and try and figure out what we can all do about it. Keep it right here, guys. Appreciate you guys being here this morning. We will see you in just 1 second.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
Real people, real radio.
Initiating the truth frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. We're having just a tiny bit of a technical issue. It's not going to be a big deal. Kenneth is resetting his router right now. He was just having some issues with his home phone. So I'm just going to talk a little bit, one more second, about a couple of things, and then I'm going to try and reach back out to him. So just give us just a few seconds here, and we'll bring all of this together. I did want to kind of leave on a decent note today, because there was one decent story. The Environmental Protection Agency has now issued a moratorium that will restrict the use of new pesticides that have been blamed for declining bee populations, though the policy does not actually apply to products currently on the market. So the chemicals in question are these neonicotinoids, which are a new class of insecticides that affect the central nervous system of these insects and result in paralysis and death. So on Thursday, the EPA actually sent letters to companies that have applied for permits to use the neonicotinoids as pesticides, telling them the moratorium stands until they have assessed the risks on the bee populations, and the pesticides are known to have chronic effects on honeybees and birds and butterflies and other pollinator species. Obviously, without those, we don't get to continue here with life as we know it. So, say what you will about the EPA, at least once in a while, if we can just get them to outlaw glyphosate, we're going to be in a much better place than we are right now, ladies and gentlemen. But at least they've done one thing. We can at least take it to the bank. Now they've done, pardon me, one thing that does seem to have some sort of effect. So I kind of like that. Okay, let's see if we can get Mr. Shorten on the phone here with us. Bear with me here just one second, guys. And I will be back with you in 5 seconds here. Hang on. Let's just see if we can do this. Appreciate you guys having the patience. I know sometimes with the live radio it gets a little wonky, and you know how it goes sometimes. Definitely looking forward to talking to Mr. Shortchindo if we get that far. Hello, Kenneth.
I am here.
Oh my gosh, and you sound fantastic. Appreciate you hanging in there with us through our little technical snafu. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, so once again, very excited to be welcoming back to the program. It's been a little while since I've gotten a chance to talk with Mr. Shortchin Jr. here, but he is a writer for the Daily Economist. He's also contributed to secretsofthefed.com, but he is a historian in his primary field of study. He's also an investor in the real world. He's also an author and pretty much just a darn smart guy. So we like to talk to him about his unique perspective perspective on geopolitical events, on some of the economic developments that are going on right now. Because you, sir, you have traded as an investor in securities and real estate, currency trading, international trusts. I mean, all kinds of things. You really have your thumb in a lot of different pies there. And so, ladies and gentlemen, the reason I like to bring Kenneth onto the show is because despite the fact that he's not actually a certified financial advisor, the guy knows what he's talking about, and he hits the nail on the head when it comes to a lot of different issues. So, Kenneth, thank you very much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Well, thank you for the invitation. Should be fun.
It always is fun. I think, you know, despite the fact that the world is crazy, which it apparently is, there is still enough going on that, I don't know, I guess you have to almost take all of this with a humorous grain of salt these days, don't you? Because if you don't, your head will explode. I mean, there's just so much happening right now, you know? I guess let's start there, Kenneth. I'm looking at the expansion of the AIIB. We're looking at whether or not Greece is going to hit their target of being able to repay the IMF this week, plus toying around with Russia. There's just so much going on right now. I guess what's the largest thing on your radar that you're paying attention to right now?
Obviously, it's the AIIB.
Right.
And the fact that pretty much all the financial centers, that were allied with the West for, you know, 70 years since Bretton Woods have suddenly, seen the writing on the wall and jumped ship.
Mm-hmm.
And the U.S., of course, doesn't, you know, like the old Roman Empire, doesn't want to give up its power even though it's in its death throes. And so they are seeking to foment war and to, you know, I'll come out and say it. Nearly every single terror attack that's been infiltrated in Europe, you have to question it. One, because, you know, the U.S. imposed Operation Gladio going back to the 50s during the Cold War,
mm-hmm.
to cause false flag terror attacks on Europe to keep them in line and not from moving over to the side of the Soviet Union. But if you think about it, France has been hedging towards Russia for quite a while over the past 2 years, and we have the unprecedented fine on BNP Paribas for sanction violations from 2001. That's what they were fined for, not
right.
Something recent, you know, something spurious that Holder pulled out just to try to put pressure on them.
Right.
We have the accidental death of France's CEO of Total in Moscow from a snowblower.
You know. Ooh, I don't think I heard that story.
Oh yeah, the CEO of Total Oil, the eighth largest in the world and like the second largest in Europe. He was over in Moscow with talking to Putin about a new oil and natural gas deal.
Mm-hmm.
And BNP Paribas, the reason it was set is because BNP Paribas was the one that was funneling the oil for gold finances between Iran, Turkey, and Russia.
Oh, okay.
So that's why they were going after them. So then you have if you think about it, the airport that in Moscow, just outside of Moscow, consider it like the Hamptons are to New York City.
Okay.
You know, it's where the elite all hang out, and this is that area that they were at just outside of Moscow. It's where, you know, it's like a private airstrip. It's where the elite are. It's really rich area.
Okay.
And so here comes this person driving a snowplow on the tarmac, on the runway, while the plane was taking off.
What?
Yeah. Clips the plane. The plane takes off and then immediately crashes. So you're going to tell me that that's not engineered. Then, of course, we have Charlie Hebdo,
mm-hmm.
the Charlie Hebdo massacre. Well, most people don't realize that about a month before, a subsidiary of the Rockefellers, or the Rothschilds, I'm sorry, the Rothschilds bought Charlie Hebdo.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, people, you know, there's still a lot of question because because they took some pictures. And one of the police officers who was supposedly shot, you see him getting up like a few minutes later.
Right.
So it was a whole stage thing.
Oh yeah, plus you got the guys who apparently I would guess that they're Mossad, but you got guys with flap jackets on running around the roof, you know, while all that was going on. I mean, that doesn't make any sense, right?
Or the fact that just like at 9/11, they found a pristine driver's license
right.
in the vehicle.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I don't buy it.
All of these things are messages to France. Don't you start moving over to Russia, or we can do this. You know, it's a repeat of the Cold War, Operation Gladio, if anybody wants to look it up. So we've got that going on, and for Germany, France, Britain, and interestingly enough, they all did it in the last week of membership sign-up.
Right.
So they realized the writing's on the wall, and they had to – one thing, you know, China today has a history of corruption, you know, from their lowest-level administrators over the towns and cities to their banking system. So that's one of the reasons why the West has really been outside of Hong Kong, which used to be under British control and highly regulated, a lot of the West did not like to deal with Chinese banking system.
Hmm, okay.
It's the equivalent of, remember hearing about in the 50s and 60s, whenever you heard of Japanese products, they were cheap transistor radios and plastic.
Right.
But 20 years later, all of a sudden, Toyota is the number one car company in the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ahead of Ford and GM. That's what it is really today in China. China's new premier, Xi Jinping, really got serious about reform because he wanted China to become the global banking system to the world.
Right. Okay.
And to do that, you have to sell yourself as being integral and also being able to, you know, fund the development facilities that the West used to have in the IMF, the World Bank, Swiss system, et cetera. And it was ironic because China wasn't really intending to do this until the Fed started QE. So here's China with all of this, U.S. reserves, all this debt, all these treasuries, and the U.S. is suddenly inflating their dollar and devaluing it and increasing the money supply.
Okay.
So they saw their reserves as nearly being worthless. And that's when they set in motion, we're going to take all these things and buy hard assets. Now, the AIIB, Jim Willey mentioned this a couple weeks ago. It's starting out as, quote-unquote, a development bank.
Right.
And all the member states are putting in something like $5 to $10 billion to be a voting member on it, et cetera, et cetera. The AIIB is going to expand to something even greater. Right now, April 1st was the cutoff date for membership, although China has extended the talks, the membership opening to Japan, which they're expected to have talks in June.
Oh,
Japan,
okay.
Japan decided not to join up with it. You know, they're America's lackey.
Right.
Pretty much that's where they're at, even though their economy is for garbage, and the only way they're ever going to get out of it is to actually divest themselves from U.S. hegemony. So you've got that. Well, the AIIB is going to be this. Here's what they're offering to Germany, France, London, you know, all of these. How about we be a central depository for you to dump your treasuries, dump all your dollars. Then they're going to give them gold, these 30,000 tons of gold that the Chinese have been accumulating over the last 2 years at about 1,000 tons a month.
Right.
From the West. We're going to give you gold, and you can use that gold as set up collateral using your dollars and your reserves. You can set that as collateral as we create a new system based on a gold-backed trade note.
So is this going to be the renminbi becoming essentially gold-backed, or are we talking about essentially like something comparable to like an SDR basket, but in the realm of the BRICS or institutions?
I guess that may eventually, but it's really going to be about a trade note. You understand what letters of credit are, correct?
A little bit, but let's go ahead and I'm having a tough time braining today, so if you could maybe extrapolate on it just a little bit, especially there might be some listeners out there who don't.
No worries. Well here's what goes on in the world in shipping and that. Say FAO Schwartz, the toy company out of New York.
Uh-huh.
They want to buy 50,000 from a Chinese manufacturer. They want to buy 50,000 Tickle Me Elmos. So they'll go to their bank, which deals with international commerce, and they'll say, we'd like a letter of credit for $10 million to purchase these products from a Chinese factory.
Okay.
So they'll get the letter of credit, which is backed by the deposits that are on in the bank, they'll send the letter of credit to the Chinese company. Chinese company will then package, distribute, and put on a boat these 50,000 Tickle Me Elmos. They'll ship them over to New York, and once they get arrived and get verified, then the FAO Schwartz will go to the bank and release the funds to pay for that letter of credit.
Gotcha.
It's based on back in the 13th, 14th, 15th century, the great banking houses, say like in Italy, where you had Venice and Florence. It was not feasible to walk around with, say, 1,000 gold coins. One, it's heavy, and two, you're going to get ripped off.
Right.
So all the banks were interconnected, and if you had gold deposited at, say, the main bank in Venice, but you were going to Florence to do business, they would give you a letter of credit worth 1,000 gold coins or whatever. And then when you get to Florence, you could give that letter of credit. They would give you the 1,000 gold, and you could go transact your business, whatever, and they just get the gold back from Venice at some other time.
Okay.
That's where the whole philosophy of trading comes from in the letters of credit. Well, this is going to be a gold back, so what's going to happen is, say, in the future, China wants to purchase $5 billion worth of minerals from Argentinian mines.
Uh-huh.
So they'll already have gold verified by independent inspectors that is set aside solely for the use in trade and commerce. They'll give a letter of credit for or a gold-backed trade note to Argentina, which is the equivalent of a U.S. Treasury, AAA rated, which means that if they have this gold-backed trade note, Argentina then could use that to spend with any country that's under the AIB or the Shanghai Cooperation Organization or anybody in that trade market.
Right.
Because it's good as gold. It's equivalent as good as gold. So that's what it's going to be, is it's not going to be the renminbi or a basket of currencies at first. It's going to be a letter of credit that's backed by gold that is as good as money. And that's the big differences. We're talking the difference between money and currency.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and they're also going to have the ability to circumvent all the sanctions that they're under now, right? Going with the extra SWIFT organization or the alternative SWIFT organization, that's a whole other can of worms, is it not?
You hit the nail on the head. Here's one of the big reasons why. After a year and some odd of sanctions, and Europe's economy, because they can't trade with Russia, is absolutely, declining.
Greece especially, man, they were huge trading partners with Russia, and they're really getting it stomped right now.
So is France. That's one of the reasons why France was not. Now, I'll get to the importance of the Russian-Greek summit here in a second.
Okay.
But the big reason that a lot of Europe decided to move over at the last minute to the AIB is because the IMF and the World Bank were originally created as simply development banks to give loans to emerging markets, help them build their infrastructure, help solidify economies, things like that. But over time, the U.S. used the dollar and its control over these systems as a weapon.
Uh-huh.
If you think about it, when we had sanctions on Iraq leading up to the 2003 attack, these sanctions were UN-based. They were voted on by a conglomerate of countries. The sanctions that the U.S. just imposed on Russia were by the U.S. alone, where they expected their allies to follow suit.
Right.
There's no international body that is sanctioning the sanctions.
Right, okay.
So Russia just gave its retaliatory and said, you know what, we don't do a lot of business with the U.S., but we do a ton with Europe. So we can't really put a dent into the U.S. by doing retaliatory sanctions against them, but we can really hurt them by going after their allies. It's the equivalent of during the British Empire. If you really want to cause harm to Britain, you don't do it by bombing Britain. You do it by bombing India, one of their colonies, because that all of a sudden they're extended and they have to really stretch their resources just to save one of their extended allies.
Okay.
So, you have that going on, and with U.S. using it as a weapon and the collateral damage being Europe and their economy, they said, you know what, we want to join this because so far what we have found is China does not intend to impose austerity on anybody. They don't intend to use the control of this bank as a weapon. It's a free trade. And after 40 years, despite the fact that everybody's got a Rothschild bank and they're under the dominion of the bankers, at a certain level, they understand that the fiat currency Keynesian system has failed, and they're looking for any way that they can get back to sound money.
Right.
And this is the opportunity. Now, for countries that don't have gold, they've got some sort of resources. They may have mineral deposits. They may have oil. They may have this. This is also going to be able to eventually use as collateral to back these gold-backed trade notes.
Is this also why we see the dollar rising up so much right now? We see gold staying pretty flat. I mean, there seems to be a lot of like behind the scenes kind of stuff. Like they're propping up the dollar to give all of these other countries an opportunity to basically scoop up gold at bargain basement prices right now, in my opinion.
No, that's not what's going on. The reality is the dollar's going up is because everybody's dumping it. And if you have an oversupply of dollars in the world, then the dollar's value is going to be less. Mm-hmm. Because it's going to cause inflation to local currencies. But if all those dollars are going back and they're not being used in commerce, in the economy, then you have restricted supply or liquidity, and thus the amount of dollars that are actually out there are worth more. The real fact that the dollar is going up is, one, the euro did quantitative easing.
Right.
But everybody is dumping their dollars, and they're keeping hush-hush about it. So they're coming back, and they're being stored in Euroclear. We had $450 billion stored in Belgium, the Belgian bulge. We have tons that are stored at the Fed, but it's just not getting out to the general economy. So there's what is becoming with the dollar a liquidity crisis. Well, unlike 2010, when there was a major liquidity crisis after the 2008 crash, there was a liquidity crisis in Europe where the U.S. Fed had to lower the discount rate for dollars in the currency swap. Right now, thanks to Russia and China last year implementing where you can buy oil for currencies other than the dollar, mm-hmm. as in the ruble and the yuan, now countries are able to buy their oil directly, bilateral trade there. They're bypassing the petrodollar, so they don't need to buy dollars. They don't need to keep these reserves, so they're all coming back to the U.S.
Hmm. So as that process continues, though, we're going to see the dollar then start to go down?
We're going to see the dollar reach maximum proportions, but for the wrong reasons, not because people recognize it as strong. It's actually the opposite. People don't want it, so it's not being used. But eventually, at a certain point, what the AIIB also does is, because so many economies are going there, Europe is isolating the U.S. Europe is saying, we don't want to do business with you.
Okay.
And what first is going to be economic, then it's going to be, we're not going to support NATO moves, so we're just going to get out of NATO. And then the potential, of course, is that the European Union is going to either dissolve, or it's going to change in the methodology we have. Because the importance about Greece, here we'll get on Greece real quick.
Okay.
There's a lot of rhetoric. Obviously there was a payment that was due to the IMF today.
Oh, is that today? Okay. Greece covered it. Did they get it? Okay.
April 9th, they covered it today. Nobody's saying if they got the money from Russia. Nobody's saying how they got the money.
I was wondering if they were involved with this big robbery that went down in London over the weekend. I was wondering if they were going to pay the IMF off with the rubles and, rubies and gemstones and things like that from that.
No, I don't think Greece is that clever.
Gotcha.
But they were able to make their payment, and really they're doing this, they're kicking a can. I'll show you straight. Greece will never be able to pay off their debt, period. It is so huge. And here's something that most people don't realize about Greece. Greece for centuries has a culture of avoiding taxes.
Really?
Yeah. It's in their culture that they pay as little taxes as possible, or they skirt paying taxes, they avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the reasons why Greece is in financial trouble as it is. Is because all those decades, they weren't getting their full accounting of revenue from taxes. And then, of course, you had horribly corrupt government that was siphoning off most of it.
Right.
And then eventually you get put in there a technocrat, Papandreou, from the ECB. And he siphoned off a bunch, and he got out of there real quick. And so the people are beyond pissed off. Now, here's where the Russian-Greek thing gets into thing. The ECB, as the monetary system of the European Union, has autonomy. This is why they were able to pull off QE, even though Germany protested vehemently against it.
Okay.
However, according to the European Union Charter, any political laws, changes, adaptations, etc., must always be unanimous. That even means if you kick somebody out of the EU, it has to be unanimous. The country being kicked out of the EU has to vote to be kicked out of the EU.
Oh, right. Okay.
Now, if the European Union is standing as a whole for sanctions against Russia, standing with U.S. sanctions against Russia,
mm-hmm.
Now Russia has become a de facto member of the European Union through its new proxy, Greece. And the next time, because these sanctions are not permanent from the EU, they are actually renewable about every 6 months to 1 year.
Right.
So the next time a vote comes up to continue sanctioning against Russia, guess who's going to vote against it?
I'm going to guess Greece.
Greece. Mm-hmm. And the sanctions will be done.
Mm-hmm.
And now Russia also has a partner because there is talk coming out of there that they're going to provide them billions of dollars, but they're going to take control of their oil companies.
Oh, really?
And Greece is going to become the oil, central oil place for the new Turk Stream pipeline coming out of Turkey that's going to go into Europe.
Wow.
So Russia is doing is they're giving them short-term help. If this is what I'm hearing is right, they're giving them short-term financial help to kick the can of their debt down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And they're telling Greece, by giving us certain things in your country, we are going to provide for your long-term health by making you the central energy depot going into Europe through the new Turk Stream pipeline. So they're going to have future revenues coming in from being a part of that.
Is that good news for Greece, though? I'm having trouble figuring that out.
It's incredible news for Greece because what is the IMF and the ECB and Germany? They've already had 5 years of forced austerity.
Right.
No, austerity doesn't help your economy.
Oh, God,
no. If it did, then Argentina would have been the richest country in the planet back in the 90s when they went through 10 years of austerity thanks mm-hmm. to IMF debt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, the Keynesians need to be shot down. The university professors who teach this garbage need to be, you know, jailed, imprisoned, you know, put up on charges for being economic terrorists.
Right. Now,
this is just horrible. Horrible that we've had this for 50 years. And we are now seeing it play, the rebellion by the world. This, think about it, is the Asian Spring. Only instead of needing food, it's a rejection of dollar hegemony.
Wow, and it's just so funny, though, that people have been talking about this pending event of, you know, the demise of the dollar, and they've just been really working behind the scenes for the last year, and they're right there. They're ready to throw the switch. We got 57 countries now signed up for the AIIB. I don't know. I'm wanting to know. We got to go to this quick 3-minute break here, Ken, but when we come back, I want to know what you think the catalyzing events are going to be. You know, what are we looking at as far as a chain of events? And also, I'm kind of curious about your concepts or your ideas about the Shemitah year and the 7-year cycle, because we didn't get to talk about that last time. So we're going to go to this 3-minute break, ladies and gentlemen. Keep it right here at truthfrequencyradio.com, and we'll be right back with our very special guest, Ken Shorten Jr., in just 1 minute. Well, 3 minutes, actually. It'll seem like 1 minute, but it'll seem like more.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Oh. Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case. And for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years. All for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. 910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at HempUSA.org.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Doctrine Ministries with Kenneth Emanuel.
Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break, and thank you guys for hanging out in the chat room today. If you guys have any questions or comments for Mr. Kenneth Shortgen Jr., you can put them in there, and I will steward them across and try and weave them into the tapestry of our interview today. We're talking quite a bit today about, you know, the pending change that is coming down the pike, I think, as we move away from the dollar and as the AIIB really gets ramped up. But what do you think about in terms of a time frame? Like, what should we be looking at, and is there any correlation, in your opinion, Ken, to this whole mystical, 7-year cycle, Shemitah year kind of thing? Are there correlations between those two concepts, sir?
Oh, well, the Shemitah actually does have historical validation, both biblical and going back thousands of years. I think like with anything, it's just something to keep on the radar.
Right.
Because, you know, if you really think about it, you can look at events going forward, like the ones we're talking about, the move towards the AIIB. Oh, and by the way, real quick, last hour you were talking about the why the debt limit was frozen last 21 days.
Yes, that was.
Yeah, well, if you remember, there was only a temporary advancement of the debt limit by Congress, and that ended on March 15th.
Okay.
So right now we don't have an extension of the debt limit, so
right.
That's why they're not officially showing it rising.
But we are officially spending money though, right?
Oh yeah, if you believe that we've stopped borrowing money, well, cuckoo.
Right, that's what I thought. Okay.
No, they're just not officially reporting it, just like they don't officially report 93 million Americans who aren't collecting, who aren't in the workforce anymore.
Right. Par for the course.
Yeah, I would say the Chinese already have September to October is when they're going to implement their SWIFT system. Once they do SWIFT, that means globally anybody can use it to buy and sell yuan free float. They've already London is already starting to sell yuan-based bonds.
Right.
So it's going to be a fully floatable and functioning currency. And when that happens, that's when, all hell's going to break loose. Well, it just so happens that that happens to occur right in the time of the Shemitah.
And I don't think that's a coincidence. I mean, to me, that just doesn't seem like that could possibly be a coincidence.
No, it's not necessarily a coincidence. I guess the thing to always take with a grain of salt is, biblically, people may follow things like the blood moons or the Shemitah or the Sabbath year or the Jubilee or that type of thing.
Right.
But the other side, the powers that be that pretty much follow astrology.
Mm-hmm.
Those signs are coming up the same way. That's one of the reasons why they particularly love numbers. They love doing things on particular days when certain astrological formations and in the zodiac or whatever, with the planets alignment, they love doing it on that, because for those who understand spiritual power, there is a increased spiritual power during those times.
Right.
For the common secular who just thinks of math and physics and logic and that, they can't really relate to it. So a message like the Shemitah or astrology in that is for a certain eclectic individual,
mm-hmm.
who's trying to put things together, both what we see in the physical world and what we are determining in the spiritual world, how they coincide. Because if you think about it, there is a scripture verse that says, as above, so below.
Right.
So what's happening spiritually is going to influence what happens on the earth and vice versa.
Well, I'm seeing all of these other indicators too. You got Christine Lagarde coming out and doing her crazy numerology speech. We've got the Pope coming to address Congress, I believe, in September. And I wanted to say that I read something about, the non-typical expansion of the SDR basket from the IMF happening in October instead of at the first of the year, when they were talking about bringing China in. More normally, as far as I know, all that stuff usually happens on the first of the year. But they were saying that they were trying to kind of push the renminbi into the SDR basket potentially a little bit early, which I thought was kind of unusual. And again, pulling out that same, September type time frame. And it just made me wonder. And then you've also got like all this stuff that's non-economic related. You got the Cheyenne Mountain move today, right? We're moving NORAD back to Cheyenne Mountain. This is a third $800 billion move or whatever it's going to cost us in the last two decades. They're preparing for something, it seems like. We got this Jade Helm thing going on here in the United States. All of this stuff is culminating in September. And, I kind of wonder too, if we do move towards this global asset, the globally backed asset and the ability to get out from under the dollar hegemony, is that effectively going to be a jubilee year for everyone except for the United States? I mean, would that be a great benefit to humanity, in that Shemitah tradition?
Oh, it certainly would. I mean, the purpose behind this is that, the heart of man is wicked. And
yes.
even for the best people, you're going to have those who it's like the liberal mindset. They want to do good, but with other people's money.
Right.
so in all things, very rarely do you find somebody who's purely benevolent in their actions, or that they are the intentions end up with the fruit of their works. So when you get to September, one of the reasons probably why Lagarde is wanting to do this instead of the beginning of the year is because, like I said, that's when China's SWIFT system comes into play, so the yuan becomes completely free-floatable.
Okay.
And once it's free-floatable, then it's a recognized currency and they want to get it in. China, on the other hand, wants to get into the SDR, quote, IMF, to
right.
kill it. They want to get in to control it, to kill it. They don't want the IMF. And this is why you see Lagarde. Once the AIIB really started getting a lot of traction, mm-hmm. Lagarde did this op-ed in one of the newspapers saying the IMF can offer a lot to the Chinese and the AIIB. We should be a part of it.
Yeah, we were enthusiastically wanting to join it, or something to that effect, wasn't it?
Exactly. And
yeah.
And when you are the number one international development bank in the world, the IMF, you don't go begging to your competitor. What that is a move of desperation, knowing that Lagarde knows that once the AIIB becomes fully functional and fully the thing, she's out of a job, and they don't want her. Just like the clown who's running the World Bank yesterday came out and said, we would like to offer the AIIB guidance and mentorship because we can help you through the rough patches. And no, The Chinese are sitting there with a little smile on their face, nodding their head. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now get the hell out. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, let's just put that into perspective for people, because what we're actually talking about is if China gets if the renminbi gets added to the IMF SDR basket, China is going to have more of a say over how those SDRs are used and what kind of development can be done with them. So you're basically saying that by them joining up with the, getting involved with the SDR at the IMF, they're going to have more control over how that bank is actually operated. Meanwhile, they've got this whole other bank in the background that they can now free float and just basically run amok with and do whatever they want with. So I'd never even thought about that as if that move would have been a control mechanism. That's really interesting.
Yeah, no, they're going to join it to take control and to kill it. Hmm. Why have competition? You have the BRICS Bank, you have the AIB, you have the Eurasian Economic Union, you have the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Why do you need anything else? They have spent the last two and a half years duplicating every single financial infrastructure in the West. And they have built it not on force, but by offering a different solution, by offering free trade, direct bilateral trade. What the Chinese are saying is this, okay? Back at the end of World War II, when almost every economy in the world except the United States was completely destroyed, yes, there was a need for a centralized reserve currency.
Right.
But now, 70 years later, when most of the world is industrialized and standing on their own 2 feet, and their currency is freely traded, we don't need a reserve currency. We can go back to what it was before, have direct bilateral trade, and what did we use for direct bilateral trade for thousands of years? We used gold.
That's right.
So we're going to do this. We'll recognize your currency. And see, you know, we probably talked about, or you heard about the currency reset that was supposed to occur in early 2014.
Yes, absolutely.
But the United States, who has signed up on that, reneged on it.
Right.
And said we won't do it because they were going to lose a lot of power. And then they instead decided to fund the coup and overthrow in Ukraine.
Right.
Well, here's what was going to happen. It wasn't a matter that they were just going to wipe out all the currency debt and all this and that. They were going to help the global currencies by repricing gold. They were going to remove the power of gold pricing away from the London Fix and the COMEX, and they were going to do it from a joint, independent, separate entity.
Right.
That wasn't controlled by the West. They were going to reprice gold, and then all currencies then would be revalued based on gold. Well, the U.S., the COMEX market is not a gold market anymore. They have not delivered anything in over 2 years.
That's what I heard. Right. Okay.
Well, so what is it? It's a derivative. It's a paper derivatives market.
Right.
All these shorts and all these control on gold is to protect the trillions of dollars worth of derivatives tied to the precious metals. Well, eventually, somebody is going to demand delivery. The COMEX isn't going to be able to do it, and then the COMEX is no longer going to be allowed to price, do price discovery or price fixing.
Uh-huh.
That's going to revert to the only true physical gold market in the world right now, the Shanghai Gold Exchange, which is about to merge with Hong Kong. They will be the world's largest physical gold market, and don't you think they have the right then, if they're a physical market, to create price discovery?
Well, I'm sure they will. But, I mean, we've been kind of watching this gold-fixing transition take place over the last couple of weeks, haven't we? Because I thought they had moved away from, the LBMA, and then they moved to the ICE organization. I can't really get my mind around what's going on, because it doesn't seem like it's had any kind of effect so far. So are you still saying that there's more transitional periods to come?
Oh, what they did was, instead of having 12 bankers in an office twice a day in London,
waving flags, right?
Yes, doing the London Fix.
Right.
They made it electronic. Well, that's just putting lipstick on a different pig.
Yeah, so old boss looks just like the new boss, or vice versa.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Price discovery is made in the market. It's made between the buyer and the seller. Well, there's no buyers and sellers here. They're just trading paper derivatives. So.
Okay.
Yeah, they're trying to keep control over the system for a short while, but come September, whether it's intrinsically tied to the Shemitah or it's tied to the plans of China, September and October are going to be, you know, the doomsday clock strikes midnight, because
right,
the world is changing.
So are we going to see then the demise of the Fed note? Are we going to see Treasury notes? I mean, what's going to happen here in the United States? That's what I'm sure most of our listeners are going to be concerned about right now, because
the best scenario comes from, again, Jim Willie, is it's going to be the U.S. is going to have the complete rejection of the dollar is going to be done. Mm-hmm. The treasuries are going to no longer be accepted. They're going to come back. Well, okay, how is the U.S. going to internationally trade? We have no industry.
Right, nothing.
We have no – the only thing we've got is some agricultural, and we've got oil.
Yeah, we just killed oil with this whole OPEC thing, and we're killing California right now.
Yeah,
so check.
Most people don't realize that back in the time of the Alaskan pipeline, they discovered out on Gull Island a reserve of oil that's greater than the entire Middle East combined that they just tapped off, and they've kept it under wraps.
Oh.
So what they're going to have to do is, as I said, if you know, you don't have to have gold to work in the new gold-backed trade note system. You have some sort of resources. So they're going to probably use that oil as a way to create a currency to function in the, you know, as their collateral for the gold-backed trade note trade system.
Is it
that will work internationally? Domestically, here's where it gets,
ugly.
There's going to be a new domestic currency.
There's going to have to be, because I don't want the Fed involved anymore. I mean, I was just going to say, because I don't want all of our assets as people to go then funded to the Fed for some new, you know, Fed note. I don't want to see that.
Right, but it's going to be a note that comes out of the Treasury.
Okay.
It's going to be devalued. Here's going to be the scenario. When the time comes, there's going to be a bank holiday. Any money you have in the bank is going to be exchanged for the new currency.
Right.
So say you have $40,000 in the bank, and the exchange rate is 10 to 1 for the new currency, you're going to come out with $4,000 of the new currency.
Right.
Then they're going to go and they're going to say, okay, everybody in the country who has dollars in their wallet or in their house or in their mattress, you have exactly 30 days to exchange your dollars for the new currency. Otherwise, it's going to be no longer legal tender, so it's going to be moot anyway. So then people are going to exchange it, and what's going to happen is their purchasing power is going to be devalued probably first about 30%, and then within 6 months, 60%, and the standard living is going to go completely down. This is the reason why we have been preaching buying gold, because gold is going to revalue in price in comparison to all currencies. Gold will go up in value, purchasing power, not necessarily against the dollar, which is going away, but against all other currencies. And as you and I talked about before, probably right now, out of all the different businesses that can provide for the coming system, is that company out of Germany called Carrot Bars.
Yeah, I'm a huge proponent of Carrot Bars. You know, I've been an affiliate with them for a long time. I know that you are also. And I got to tell you, I was really pleased the other day when you told me that you had gotten involved with them, because to me that's the answer. I mean, it's not just – that's the first time I've ever held an actual currency in my hand, Ken, when I actually got my first Carrot Bars and had the card, and I thought, wow, this is like actual money. This is what I would want to give to somebody and get back, and, you know, it just makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, you know, we talk all the time about this doom, and we talk about what is inevitably coming, and we're being pragmatic about it, okay? We're not trying to just scare everybody. We're being pragmatic. This is what is occurring, you know, and it's not a matter of having to survive. See, that's what most of the doomsday preppers, we've got to survive the apocalypse.
Right.
No. How can you figure out a way to come out ahead? Because it's about coming out ahead. Mm-hmm. New millionaires were minted during the Great Depression, when those who were prepared for the collapse that came in the stock market and the thing, they were able to buy up all the assets for pennies on the dollar when all of a sudden everybody was selling.
That's right.
That's what you're going to see now. So if you can be prepared, it's based on gold. Now, you know, you probably talked to your listeners and that on it before, but the one thing about Carrot Bars, when you take a look at the new system that's coming in and being prepared for it, one, you can buy gold to either have delivered to you by FedEx or stored in their vaults for free.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a vault in the world that will store your gold for free.
That's right.
You can have it liquidated into euros, which then can be uploaded into a MasterCard, which they have a contract with, which can be spent in any country in the world, translating into any currency. So you're not bound by the dollar, and you can actually be functional in the new global currencies.
Mm-hmm.
You have the ability to have your own business as an affiliate business. So anybody you sign up who buys gold, you get paid on it. So think about it. For those who are thinking about repatriating, you have an international company that's in 75 countries, multinational, has four different vaults, is not a bank. So no matter what your transactions are, FACTA can't touch it. The IRS can't do any reporting on it. Mm-hmm. Nobody can see it. And you have the ability to not only own gold, to be able to liquidate it with a keystroke. You have your own offshore bank account.
Yep.
And
tax
you have, are able to function in whatever the new currency of the globe is going to be. You have the opportunity to build a business where you're not. I mean, think about this. If the U.S. goes to a new layoffs from these companies because they're not going to be able to pay employees are going to be in the millions.
Yeah.
You have your own business already set up and you can travel anywhere in the world as a virtual sovereign man.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing else like it. And this is what I found. And I don't know if you've talked to or interviewed V, the Gorilla Economist.
Yeah, a couple of times we've talked to V. Yes, sir.
Yeah, he went to Germany and vetted the company.
Right.
And he's an affiliate on Carabars too. So there's a lot of people who are really strongly in this company because of all the opportunities for it. And out of, you know, you can hold gold, but if you store it offshore and can liquidate it in a moment, what good is gold if here in the United States, one, if they potentially try to confiscate it, or two, you can't take it to your grocery store because nobody recognizes what gold and silver is anymore in this country.
Right.
So you're not going to be able to buy goods. You'll have to go to a dealer or a broker who may be shut down under a quote-unquote bank holiday, so you can't liquidate it anyway.
Well, and I think that's the most important. That's my biggest love of Carabars is the fact that, A, it does have an affiliate program. You know, it's not just about just buying gold every once in a while. It's about getting your community involved because that's what I've done here. I've actually taken my Carabars out to garage sales and stuff like that and talked to people and shown them the actual cards and say, you know, hey, if things go bad, if the dollar goes away, we have enough people in the community that already know about Carabars. There it is. You've already got a backup currency system that everybody's already familiar with and it actually has value. You know, and one of the other things too that we didn't even mention is the fact that you don't have to buy a whole ounce of gold. I don't know a lot of people that can just go out and buy an ounce of gold. So what we're talking about with Carabars is the ability to buy a gram or 2.5 grams or 5 grams. And that's it. That's all they sell. They own their own gold mine. I don't know if you know that, Ken, but recently they actually purchased their own gold mine. I have to be perfectly honest, and I don't really talk to listeners about how the show works behind the scenes, but we folks here, we're on a shoestring budget and we are all wearing penny loafers right now, and I gotta be perfectly honest, if it was not for my affiliation with Carabars, we would have no radio show. That's the bottom line here is that because of my affiliation with them and my belief in them as well, that we've been able to fund this entire operation for like the last 6 months. So, I really believe in them. I've been involved with them for a long time and, I think it's the right thing to do right now, given all the constraints and all of the things that are swirling around with the world right now. Getting into gold just makes the most amount of sense to me, Ken.
And you know, beyond the ability of gold, as opposed to most network marketing companies where you have to do an auto ship every month and you have to make purchases every month, you don't have to make purchases. There's no requirement for purchases.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, there's a video out there that shows that if you, it costs about $350. That's going to be about your only cost to join up as an affiliate. If you can find two people who will buy the same package and they find two people within 7 weeks, you'll be making about $3,450 per week.
It's crazy.
And people, you know, a lot of people think that you get something for nothing. Oh, I want a business, but I'm not going to put any money into it. Let me tell you something. You're going to put hundreds of thousands of dollars if you try a brick and mortar business.
Yeah.
You're going to be paying $100 to $150 a month if you do a network marketing where you have an auto ship. This is a single thing, and you get gold. It's not like you're just getting a package of books and all that. You get gold with a silver package. You get discount cards so you can buy gold at a discount. You get discount cards for packages so you can do that. If you know people, there are 93 million Americans who are not in the workforce. There are plenty of people who are looking for a chance to actually do something.
That's right.
So now is the time. You know, when the transition comes, when the new currency system comes, when all these things come, it's too late. You know, prepare yourself now. Have all of these things checked off. Even if you don't want to be an affiliate and run it as a business, signing up as a customer. You can sign up as a customer right now for free.
That's
right.
It doesn't
cost you a thing, and you're not required to buy anything at any time.
Mm-hmm.
You can always sign up as a customer, and you can decide if you want to do the business later and buy a package. But here's the thing. You can only sign up with Carrot Bars under somebody as a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot go to, you know, for anybody listening, you can't go to Carrot Bars and say, I want to just sign up. You have to have a sponsor. So, you know, we always talk about, like I said, we always talk about the things that are coming, and there are a lot of negative what is inevitably coming. But this is a great potential solution. You, and now people may have other solutions, other ideas, or they're already prepared. That's great. You know, we'll see you on the other side.
That's right.
But it's not about surviving. It's about being able to come out ahead in the next system for mm-hmm. you and your family.
I totally agree. And again, we'll probably have to have you back and do like a full Carrot Bar show sometime, because there's, it's almost, you could spend an hour really talking about how great that organization is. And, I don't want to get too far off track, because I do want to kind of come back. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, some other ways to kind of hedge our bets. If there's anything else out there that you think you could maybe get now, other currencies that you think might revalue in the future. I'm looking at, and I know we're not supposed to own them in this country, but I'm looking at the Iranian rial right now, hoping that these sanctions are going to drop and that that currency might come back in value. Are these crazy thoughts that I'm having, Ken? What do you think?
Those are crazy thoughts, because, you know, how many people lost tons and tons and tons of money with the Iraqi dinar?
I don't know. Does that still remain to be seen?
Yeah, the Iraqi dinar scheme is worthless, because the government's not solid enough. You know what? You should never invest in a currency that doesn't have at least a 10-year track record. You're not going to, you know, you're going to take hit or miss, but the risk factor, because economies and governments are changing overnight,
right.
And we are in a war cycle. So you're going to see geopolitical things change in an instant. The Ukraine, Yemen, we've got ISIS, the entire Middle East is going to change, and the world is moving towards coalitions again, just like you had the great treaties and that led to World War I. Well, that's what's happening now, only it's an economic treaty, not a military treaty.
Right.
The European, or the Eurasian Economic Union, the Shanghai Cooperation. Of course, has lasted for about 20, 25 years, but thanks to the fact that they built their entire system on debt, it's falling away. The U.S. is trying to create the TPP and the TPIP,
right,
to make corporations virtual sovereign nations. Now, that's a really fascinating thing. Did you see the WikiLeaks release on the TPP?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, WikiLeaks on March 30th came out and did a release. Here's what it says. It says corporations, if it follows through, corporations will have the right to sue any municipality or government in a private court that is run by corporations, like the mediator system.
Right.
Now, here's what it says. If a company believes that they have had a loss of profit or the expectation of a loss of profit due to policies, laws, regulations made by cities, states, or nations. Now, get this. I took this to the nth degree. Say a country like the United States is talking about going to war against Iran, but then Congress votes and says, we're not going to go to war.
They can sue
then
us.
Then a corporation who's an arms dealer can
That's
sue
right.
them in a private court to force them to go to war because they would lose profit from selling arms.
Ken, we are out of time today, brother. We're going to have you back on to talk about the TIIP here in the future. You take care. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, and had a great time.
I did too. Please go check out thedailyeconomist.com, ladies and gentlemen, and give Ken some support.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call in to your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUE.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.